They call him the closer. James Judd is the man that the storytelling show Snap Judgment brings out to bring down the house. The lawyer and former stand-up comedian is known for his brash, energetic style and his rollicking stories of public embarrassment and failure. He will be among the performers taking the stage of Atlanta Symphony Hall this weekend when Snap Judgment rolls into town. And producer Mike John spoke to him over Skype about what makes for a good story.
James, do you remember when you started telling stories or when you first realized that you were a storyteller?
Yes, I do. That's what my story that I'm telling in Atlanta is about. Okay, so when I was 11, it was the summer after sixth grade, and I was just very, very panicked about going to junior high school because I was the class weirdo. And I knew that I was going to get picked on a lot. So I was trying to come up with some way to get out of it. And that was also the summer where I saw The Exorcist. I was a tall child, so I was able to sneak into R-rated movies when I wanted to. And I thought, well, this is it. This is the answer. If I can become possessed by the devil, I can skip seventh grade. So I couldn't figure out how to do that. And then it occurred to me that maybe I should think bigger. And if I could get all the kids in the neighborhood possessed by the devil, then the whole school will be shut down. So I put on a puppet show of The Exorcist for the neighborhood kids. And I thought it went great. But the neighbor parents weren't too happy. And so to basically keep the neighborhood from chasing me out of the neighborhood, my parents sent me away to Bible study camp, where I did it again. And, well, you'll just have to see the story to find out how that happened. But it did lead me to realizing that that there was power in being able to stand up in front of an audience and tell a story.
So you started by sort of Tom Sawyering kids into devil worship, basically? Is that
yeah,
the gist I'm getting?
You sound surprised if there was something wrong with that. I thought it was, you know, it was an effective way to broaden everyone's worldview. Didn't work, but
yeah, but you know. I mean, you have a background in law and in stand-up comedy. There's a lot of crossover between those two.
Yes.
How did that grow out of those early experiences telling stories to neighborhood kids?
Well, let me tell you this. The first time I ever got somebody out of jail, I succeeded because I told the prosecutor a bunch of jokes in a bar after work. And so after 3 years of law school and passing the bar, it turned out the easiest, most effective way to get somebody out of jail was to tell the right person a joke. I could have just, you know, skipped all those years and gone directly down to the county jail and just started freeing the masses. But there, you know, it's very true that all the skills that I learned doing stand up and the sort of pressure of performing in a silent room did come into play when I became a criminal defense attorney.
Yeah. What is that power that is contained within a story or a good joke or making somebody laugh?
I think a large part of it is being able to capture the imagination of your audience and being able to get them to set aside what else is going through their head and follow along with you on that story. And that is a difficult thing to learn how to do. Because, you know, if you think of yourself sitting in a theater or, you know, listening to a comic or even watching a movie, everything that's happening is competing with what's going on in your head. And it takes a lot for somebody to be able to push out all that extraneous thought and get you to focus on them for a few minutes. And especially in our very fractured society with all of our technology, people's attention spans are very, very short. So to get somebody to sit in a theater and listen to 6 10-minute true personal stories from complete strangers, it's quite a skill.
Yeah. I mean, in the age of podcasting, it seems like people are more, they're more primed for that kind of thing. There are more and more outlets for that kind of reality storytelling. I mean, Snap Judgment being just one of them, a really good example of the genre. There's also, you know, The Moth. And here in Atlanta, we have several live shows that are, you know, based entirely around storytelling. One of the things that audiences that I've spoken to cite as, you know, the appeal of storytelling is the intimacy of it. But in the venues that I've seen you play on YouTube, and indeed, like, Symphony Hall is a good example of this. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call those intimate venues. So can you talk about how you maintain that kind of intimacy and grip on an audience that is that size? Or is it just a completely different set of muscles that you have to work for a big crowd to keep their attention?
No, I think it's exactly the same set of muscles that I've been developing for a long time. And I think it's really the ability to command a large venue is that old saying, experience plus preparation equals success. I've performed in some really incredibly strange places. In Montreal, I performed in a swimming pool. I performed in a bar that was on fire, and I was determined to finish before the smoke alarms went off, and I did. I had a heart attack during one of my shows once, and I finished the show on the sidewalk while the emergency crews were getting somebody out, and then getting that person out who survived.
Yeah.
Because I do like to say that, you know, when I say I killed, I like to think that I really do kill sometimes.
Where was this bar that was on fire?
Winnipeg.
Ah.
Winnipeg, Manitoba. And the smoke, it was a very long haul, and I could see the smoke coming in. Well, first I noticed that the lights toward the end of my show looked really great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, these lights tonight are fantastic. There's a real haze in the air. And then I saw this, I could see the smoke coming from the back door. And, you know, I realized that there was a fire, but I only had maybe 3 or 4 minutes left out of my hours. So I just, you know, I went for it and I finished, and people were already standing when the alarms went off. So it was easy to get them out.
Fantastic.
But anyway, I think that, you know, you perform in all these terrible places. You know, most of the theaters that I performed in smell like urine, you know, like someone has peed on the curtains. And I've stopped doing that. But when you learn to perform in those, under those adverse conditions, and you learn to give it all you've got. One time at the Edinburgh Film Fringe Festival, I performed for an audience of one. But I just pretended that I was, you know, camera blocking for my HBO special, and I gave it all that I had. And so then, you know, that becomes reflexive, so that when you finally do get in front of an audience with multiple balconies and people very far away from you, you know how to play to them and how to bring them in and make them feel like you're talking to them, specifically to them.
Yeah. The stories that you tell on stage often focus on public embarrassments, failures, like the story about your book report.
I know that I am not cute and perky and good at tetherball and everybody's favorite person like Mary Applebaum, I know. So I know that if I'm gonna win this thing, I need a book that's really big. I need something that's just gonna put me over the hump. I need something edgy, something ripped from the headlines. So the book I've chosen is My Search for Patty Hearst.
Yes.
What is it that makes failure and mortification fertile ground for good stories?
I think that when I was doing stand-up comedy and sort of digging around for material, I started realizing that I could use all these bad things that had happened to me as material. I mean, there's an old adage in stand-up comedy that the worse your life, the better your material. And I think that that's very true. So I started from a place of always focusing on myself. And then I think that, you know, we enjoy other people's failure. That's why we watch The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. We like to see people fall apart and fail. It's entertaining, especially when you do it from a sort of a safe distance where no one's, you know, sees how you react to it. But it's just sort of an innate thing for people to like to find out how other people fail. And then if you bring in some sort of inspiration by showing them how you got out of that situation, then, you know, people really like it.
Yeah. What do you get out of that?
I think it's, you know, in a way it's kind of a, in a way it's a kind of a addiction to reliving these things over and over and over again. And maybe in some sense you could say that, well, I've conquered that failure because I have taken what was a very negative experience and turned it into something that was positive, meaning I got a paycheck, even very small one, you know, is money. Yay, I turned that horrible thing into a couple of dollars. But I don't know if that's really true or not. I don't really think that makes the pain or the hurt of what happened to you go away. But I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't have that filter that would make someone feel like they couldn't ever share that thing that happened to them, let alone do it in front of thousands of people. There's really no limit to what I'm willing to reveal about myself. That is the limit that NPR is putting on me, but I gradually, with every show, push the line a little bit more into what I'm willing to reveal. And I actually have a couple of things in this story that I will reveal to them at the rehearsal tomorrow, which I think might get snowed out. So maybe I can spring these new bits right on the stage of Brooklyn Academy of Music Opera House on Friday night. And hopefully, if they go over well, they'll still be in the show on Sunday when we get to Atlanta.
Well, really looking forward to that. James, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
Storyteller James Judd will appear at Snap Judgment Live this Sunday, the 12th. At Symphony Hall, you can also hear Snap Judgment Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.